사람.
미스터 그린우드.
Who are you?
Mr. Luke Edward Greenwood.
Yes. How did you get into my garage?
Is this your car, Mr. Greenwood? This nice, sporty little Mazda?
Well, of course it is. Look, who the hell are you?
My name is Ralph Jameson, and I drive a silver Ford Focus.
So?
You don't remember me, do you?
No. Should I?
No. No, why should you indeed? Let me take you back, Mr. Greenwood. 23rd of March this year, 9 o'clock in the morning. You were driving down Upton Road, a little too fast.
No, I'm not.
Oh, I see you're beginning to remember. I was in Clarendon Road, stuck in a long line of traffic. And when you reached the very top of Clarendon Road in your little red Mazda, do you remember what I did?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I let you in, Mr. Greenwood. I let you join Clarendon Road right at the top of the queue. And do you remember what you did?
Look, I was preoccupied. I'd had a lot of problems at home.
Nothing! You did nothing at all. You didn't wave, you didn't nod, you didn't even look at me.
I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. What are you going to do to me?
Something I should have done a long time ago. Look at me.
No, no, please.
Look me in the eyes.
Look, I'll give you money. I've got loads of money.
I don't want your money. I want you to hear this.
Ralph, you've gone right past the turning.
Oh, sorry.
What were you thinking about? You were miles away.
Oh, nothing.
No, he's not a new friend. No, she's not a new friend. Oh, no, no, I thought she might be a new friend, but she's not. He's not a new friend. Oh, yes, oh, hello, I think you're a new friend. Yes, you are, you smell of exciting, a new friend and hooray. This one, boss, he's a new friend, boss, this one here.
Excuse me, sir, is this your bag?
This is great, you're going to love the boss. He loves meeting people who smell like you, and when I find them for him, I'm a good dog.
Could you step this way, please?
Look, I don't know why he's doing that.
This is so exciting! Honestly, some days we wait here all day hoping to find a new friend, but everyone smells boring. The boss must get so lonely.
Yeah, this way, sir.
Really, there's been a mistake.
But not today, because today I brought you together to be new friends! Hooray!
I'm sure, sir. I'll be with you in a moment.
Well done, Sam. You found him, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Well done. Who's a good dog?
I am, it's me.
Who's a good dog?
I am, I'm a good dog. Hooray!
Okay, you're ready to go, Sir Ian.
Yes, quite ready.
All right, in your own time, then.
The Gilgamesh Experiment by F. Ronald Huggeman. Read by Sir Ian McKellen. Chapter 1. Sylvia was a wife, a mother, a daughter, and a world expert on Babylonian legend. But right now, right at this moment, Sylvia was simply a woman. And a woman inflamed with desire. Languorously, she slipped off her silk...
Now, sorry I'm late.
Yeah, excuse me, didn't you see the red light? We're actually recording in here.
Recording? You can't be recording yet.
Well, yes, we are. We're recording.
I'm F. Ronald Huggeman, and you can call me F. Where do I sit?
Oh, right. I didn't know. No one said you were coming down.
Well, of course I am. I can't hang around and just do it on your phone, can I? Right, so is this a microphone? Testing, 1-2 microphone. Yeah, all right, I'm ready to go.
Right, look, no, you're not recording the book yourself, Mr. F.
I bloody am.
No, I don't think you've quite got the...
Quite the what?
Well, look, we have Sir Ian McKellen here.
Hello.
Oh, no. Now, Ian McKellen, no, I don't like him. No, he's all wrong for this. You need gravitas in this book. People on Ian McKellen and go, oh, it's that wizard. No, I'm going to do it.
No, you can't.
Well, I checked the contract, saying international bestseller, this is. I told my agent they can only have the audiobook rights if I have right of veto of choice of reader. And I've vetoed the wizard right off.
Right, I'll just piss off then, shall I?
Yeah, hop it, Beardy.
Don't even have a beard.
Right, so I'll get started, shall I?
No, look, seriously, I don't...
seriously, I am going to veto everyone except me, so you might as well just let me get on with it. OK. The Eunice Experiment by H. Ronald Huggerman. Read by H. Ronald Huggerman. Chapter 1. Sylvia was a wife, a mother, a daughter, and a world expert on the Eunice. But right now, right in this moment, Sylvia was simply a woman. And a woman inflamed with desire.
Okay. Just stop a minute.
What's the matter?
Okay, right, F, look, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to give it some, you know, some atmosphere, okay? I mean, this bit, for instance, it needs to sound, well, you know, sexy.
It was sexy. You want sexy? I can do sexy. All right, shall I go from my butt right now?
Yeah, I think probably go from the top.
Go from the top? On your bike, it's 1,000 pages long, this thing. First bit was fine, I'll go from butt right now. But right now, right in this moment, Sylvia was simply a woman, and a woman inflamed with desire. Dangerously, she removed her silk stockings, and she... What now?
What's that clicking noise? I don't...
Well, that's your fault, that is. Doing the sexy voice makes my dentures click. Hang on, I'll oik them out for you. Oh! All right, ready? Sylvia was simply a woman, and this woman inflamed with desire. Languishly, she slipped off her silken stockings. You can tell that out in the edit, can't you?
And now, a brief history of choice. First, there was no choice.
All right, this is it. It's big and grey and it sometimes catches fire.
Right, do you have any that aren't grey?
No.
Or that don't catch fire?
No.
All right, I'll take it.
Right, you are. Do you want a fire extinguisher with that? Trust me, you do.
Then, there was not enough choice.
All right, there's two kinds. There's the big grey ones, which sometimes catch fire, or the small brown ones, which don't work.
Right, I'll take the big grey one, I suppose.
And your usual fire extinguisher?
Please.
Then, for about 5 minutes, there was just enough choice.
All right, you can have a big one or a small one, and you can have it red, blue or green. The red ones sometimes catch fire, the small ones don't work, the big green one only works in Russian, and the small red one comes with a cup holder.
Right, well, I want one that works and doesn't catch fire, and I don't speak Russian, so I'll take the big blue one.
OK, but you did hear me say the small red one has a cup holder.
But it catches fire and doesn't work.
The cup holder works. Until it burns off.
I'll take the big blue one.
And then, almost immediately, there was too much choice.
All right, you can have a red one, a blue one, a yellow one, a purple one, an ochre one or an invisible one. They come in big, small, medium, extra medium, micro, giga and vast. The medium and above ones in primary colours have semi-rotating arms but aren't waterproof, except for the vast yellow ones, which are waterproof but explode. They all have cup holders, except the ochre ones, but none of them have cups, except the giga ones. The cup holders on the invisible ones aren't invisible, unless you buy online, in which case the cup holder goes invisible, but the thing itself stops being invisible. As in that case, the invisible one is now visible. You can have it in any of the above colours, except purple, unless you have it extra medium, but the formerly invisible purple extra medium ones with invisible cup holders are evil. Which would you like?
I have no idea, and I've spent 3 days comparing them all on whichthing.com. And I've done a spreadsheet, but I don't understand the spreadsheet. And all I know is whichever one I get, I won't enjoy it because I'll be constantly worrying whether I should have got one of the others instead.
Then perhaps you'll be interested in this. This is from our classic range.
Oh, look, a big grey one. My mum used to have one like that. Oh, does it still catch fire?
Only if you pay extra.
I'll take it.
OK, come through. So there's not much to do in this room. Rachel, this is Hannah, the house sitter.
Hi.
Oh, lovely to meet you.
So a couple more plants to water, that's about it. The dog's allowed in here, but not on a sofa.
Right.
Oh, that reminds me, the dog walker. He'll come by every morning about 10, just to have Henry ready for him.
Okay, great.
So, TV, DVD here, all pretty self-explanatory. Obviously, welcome to watch it. Only thing is, on Tuesday and Friday, you'll have to share it with the TV watcher. The TV watcher. She just comes round and watches some of the main TV on this. Question Time, any big drama serial, anything I should have an opinion on. By the way, Rich, I told her if there's not much on this week, she should make a start on the box sets.
Oh, that would be super. They're really mounting up.
Exactly. Sorry, Hannah. Right, through there's my study. When the novel reader comes on Wednesday, tell her there's a stack on my desk. And through there is the conservatory. Don't go in there if you don't mind. That's where I'll be.
Where you'll be?
Yeah.
Won't you be on holiday?
No, not this year, no. No, I've got a holiday goer. Lovely chap. He does the whole thing. Sees the temples, hikes the mountain trails, bonds with the kids.
Rekindles our sex life.
Yeah. The whole package, yeah. Yeah, he's marvellous, isn't he, Rachel?
Oh, yes. And what are you going to do?
I'm going to lie in a hammock in the conservatory, eating Monster Munch and watching cartoons on my phone. It's going to be amazing.
Afterwards, a Sylvia and Leonard lay entwined in the afterglow, her passion sated. Sylvia looked at him with level green eyes and said,
Leonard, you realise we could never do this again?
No, sorry, yeah. F.
What now?
What, is that how you're going to do Sylvia?
What? Yes, of course it is. That's my woman voice.
Doesn't sound like a woman.
Of course it does. That's exactly how my wife talks. It's uncanny. Are you saying my wife's not a woman?
No, of course not.
All right, then.
Leonard, you realise we can never do this again.
Leonard looked up at her. His fine brow creased in perplexity. He spoke.
But I don't understand, Sylvia. Why haven't...
Stop. All right, stop.
No, no.
Stop.
What's the matter now? What's the matter now?
Okay, where's Leonard from?
America! Haven't you read the book?
Okay, but that is not an American accent.
I know that! I can't do an American accent. So I'm doing in Welsh.
That is not Welsh!
Yeah, of course it is. Specifically, Port Talbot.
It is modelled on Richard Burton.
That is not how Richard Burton talks.
Well, right, not exactly. I never said I was an impressionist, didn't I? Look, you're breaking my flow, you are. See what we'll do. Let's record the whole thing in one go. You keep quiet, all right? Take notes, anything you want to retake on. We'll do them all at the end. All right?
Fine.
Right. And I'll just say, right now, when the police inspector comes in, he happens to be black, all right? And it will be racist not to do the voice.
Oh, hi. Could you pass me a white wine?
Oh, yes, here you are.
Thanks. I'm Verity.
Yeah, I'm Peter. Hello.
Hi. So, what do you do for a living, Peter?
All right, can I stop you there? Before you commit to that question, I just want to quickly run you through the various alternatives that open up for us once you've asked it.
OK. Don't feel you have to...
No, I want to. Now, my job will turn out to be either A, interesting to you, or B, not interesting to you.
OK.
Right, and off each of those pathways, there's a further branch. My job is either interesting to me or not interesting to me. So now let's explore those four parts.
I'm actually fine.
No, let's. One. B followed by B. You don't want to hear about my job, and I don't want to talk about it. Now, this is bad for both of us. I'll reluctantly tell you my tedious job, you'll be under social pressure to ask about it anyway, and we're both forced to talk about support service provision for 10 minutes whilst bored out of our minds.
But...
Option two. B followed by A. My job's not interesting to you, but it is to me. Now, this is a doomsday scenario for you. You've asked me about my job, so you can't really complain when I bang on about website design for half an hour.
Yeah, I can see you would do that.
Three, A followed by B. You find my job interesting, but I'm bored of talking about it. This is my doomsday scenario. If my job's the sort of job people like hearing about, I'm almost certainly fed up of answering questions about what the Earth looks like from space or what Mick Jagger is really like.
Please stop talking.
So, the only possible mutually beneficial path from your question is A followed by A. I have an interesting job, but I'm endlessly happy to talk about it. And can you see how unlikely that is? I'd basically have to be an actor.
Fine, I get it. So, as I am about to go a long way away from you now and there's absolutely no risk of any of those conversations developing, what do you do?
I'm a sword swallower. You?
I design flowcharts for NASA.
Ooh,
no,
do
too
you
late! Oh.
Hello and welcome to the interview sketch. My name's Patsy Straightwoman, all set-ups, all the time. I'm joined this week by the painter, Stanley Meadows. Good evening.
Evening.
Now, Stanley, you specialise in a very particular type of painting, I believe.
I do, yes. What I paint is ice cream vans, and what I paint on them is slightly off Disney characters.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I would have thought that the van owners themselves would have done that.
No, no. Now and again they try, and what they get then is either very off Disney characters or occasionally spot-on Disney characters. Takes real skill to get them just slightly off.
So they go to people like you?
Oh, not people like me. Me.
You do them all?
Every van in the country, single-handed. Turns out it's a rare skill. You see, a lot of people, they'll just get one thing wrong. Like, they'll do a Pluto, but with his nose too long. That's no good. The thing about my art is that I create something that when you look at each bit individually, it seems okay. But when you put it all together, it's...
slightly off.
Slightly off.
So the slightly offness is a deliberate choice.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's what the kiddies like. They like it slightly off. You make your Disney character too accurate, kiddies stop buying ice cream.
And do you only do Disney characters? Never, I don't know, something a bit more up to date? Ben 10, Dora the Explorer?
No, kiddies don't want that. No, what they want is two of Donald Duck's nephews. And the way they want them is slightly off.
Of
the only other thing I'll paint on an ice cream van is pictures of ice creams the van doesn't sell. Like ice cream in a bowl with cherries all over it, or that mad one in an oyster shell. But other than that, it's slightly off Disney characters all the way.
So, any tricks of the trade you can let us in on?
Well, one thing I like to do is use a type of black paint that fades a lot faster than the others. See, that way, after a couple of summers, your slightly off Goofy is staring out at you with blank, sightless eyes. And obviously that shifts ice cream like nobody's business.
And who are your favourite characters to do?
Oh, well, you know, Mickey, Winnie the Pooh, obviously, but I am also weirdly obsessed with the Seven Dwarves. Not Snow White, just the dwarves. And ideally, not all seven of them. Just one or two of the less recognisable dwarves hanging there in space. In fact, obscure characters in general are always a good start. I've had a lot of success with the mouse out of the Aristocats.
I don't remember a mouse.
No one does. There was one, though. Here, here's a photo of him on one of my vans.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's him. And my proud boast, though I say it myself, is that even though you don't know what he looks like, when you see my picture, you can tell it's...
Slightly off.
Here's a practice.
Yes, please.
Yes, could I have a white Americano, please?
Sure, what size?
Hello, John. It's the voice in your head.
Oh, no. No, go away. Go away.
I can't do that. You're going to say medium, aren't you?
What? Yes, I always say medium.
You should stop saying medium. Say grande.
No.
Come on. I know you hate it that the word they've picked for medium sounds like it means big, but...
No, it's not that. I got over that years ago.
What is it, then?
It's that it's Italian. I feel stupid asking for a size in Italian.
Yeah, but it's a system now. It has been for at least 10 years. Just get over yourself. You asked for an Americano, didn't you?
Yeah, but you know very well it took me 6 years to stop saying, oh, just a normal coffee. And then they'd have to say, Americano. And I'd say, yeah, fine, that's great, yeah.
Well, OK. But no, but there you are. You managed that. Now you've got to learn to ask for a grande. Go on, give it a try.
No, I'll sound stupid.
No, you won't. It's their system. It's easier for them if you say grande. If you say medium, you sound like you're trying to make a point.
What size, please?
Go on. Say grande. What's the worst that can happen?
Grande, please.
What?
Grande.
He wants a grande, eh, everyone? Hark at Giuseppe here. You want?
The medium.
That's not what you said. Tell him what you said.
Grande.
He wants a grande. He's just flown in from Napoli. He wants his coffee grande. Prego.
It's medium, you pretentious bastard.
Arrivederci, signor grande.
Thanks, voice in my head. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, obviously you're not supposed to listen to me. I thought you knew that.
Goodbye, Leonard, my love.
Shy Sylvia, her pale bosom heaving.
I'll never forget you. And not you, Sylvia. Ever, ever, ever.
And as the ship left harbour, the police inspector turned to his deputy and said,
well, I guess that's the last we'll hear of the Gilgamesh experiment!
The end. All right, Mush, that's your lot. Any retakes?
No, that was... Yeah, I don't think you could have done that any better.
Right, and you're quite sure the police inspector works better as Kermit than Black?
Quite sure.
Since you ask me for a tale of typhoons, tempests, and a life on the ocean wave, I believe I have something which is about all of those things. As a young man, I served 6 years before the mast, 8 years behind the mast, and one confusing and terrifying year on top of the mast. This story comes from when I was the leading four midshipmite on the HMS Domitable, one of the new self-effacing class of battleships. Sister ship to the Vincible, the Defatigable, and the flagship of the line, HMS Tiny. As for midshipmite man, it was my particular duty to ensure that the ginnels that ran the lee of the athwartship stokehold were kept free of spinnakers, which I should explain for laymen are the little splinters of wood which collect when the bosun's been splicing the main brace. I was busily doing that when the captain himself strode up to me. His name was Captain Pringle, and he was a vinegary old salt. At the time, he seemed to me quite one of the ancients, though looking back, I suppose he could hardly have been a day over 40.
You there, Finnamore!
He barked.
Get to the mess deck with you and help the stewards clear up from my 40th birthday party last night.
From this, you may divine that the captain had a rough tongue, but a heart of gold. Like a cat after a really weird experiment. I set off for the mess deck, but found my way blocked by the massive figure of the bosun.
Captain, there you are. There's dirty weather ahead, Captain, or I'm the son of a sea cook.
But you are the son of a sea cook, surely.
Oh, yes. I meant there's dirty weather ahead, and I am the son of a sea cook. The wind is gusting to 40 knots, the barometer is dropping like a stone, and the little man with the umbrella has come out of the clock.
Well, what of it? This old tub can weather a bit of a storm, I hope.
A storm, maybe, sir, but not a typhoon.
Don't tell me a salt-stained old sea dog like yourself believes in typhoons.
No, sir. We've been through this before. Sea monsters are made up. Typhoons are real.
Well, typhoon or no typhoon, we press on. Hard a forehead, bosun, and set all the engines to go.
But, sir...
Did you defy me, sir? Blast your eyes. Have you forgotten what day it is today? The day after my 40th birthday. If I can get this barnacle bilge bucket across the international dateline before midnight, it'll be yesterday again, and I'll get two birthdays in a row. Everyone will have to buy me double presents, and there'll be two captain's birthdays, tease.
At last I understood.
Captain Pringle loved the party and always ensured the champagne flowed steadily. Indeed, it had been well said of him that once he popped, he found it extraordinarily difficult to cease from popping. And so we pressed on into the very teeth of the storm. Waves billowed up on either side of the ship, tall as mountains, but way more soggy. As I struggled to keep the bowsprit lashed to the forecastle, I saw the captain staggering along the deck towards the wheelhouse to speak to the helmsman.
Can you keep her on course, Muspratt?
He bellowed.
I can try, sir, at any rate.
Return the plucky fellow.
Good man, but you realise you're in grave danger exposed on deck like this.
Ah, well, sir, that's as maybe, but if I gave up, sir, how could I look the little woman back in Portsmouth in the eye? Or the big woman in Birmingham in the chin? Or the enormous woman in Dundee in the knee?
You're a brave man, Muspratt,
said the captain, but before the words were out of his mouth, a mighty wave hit. And the wheelhouse was torn off as if the ship had been a child's toy. And the sea was a child. And a child who really hated wheelhouses. Didn't want one on his ship. And was unusually strong for a child if the model was die-cast, which they usually are. Now unable to steer, we wallowed in the full ferocity of the storm, and as the waves crashed about us, we prepared to meet our doom! Just then, we reached the eye of the storm. The wind abated, the sea was flat calm, the bo'sun and I played deck billiards, and the captain built a house of cards on top of the sleeping ship's cat. And then we were out the other side, and as the storm lashed at us twice as hard as before, and we plummeted into the chasm of the waves, I began to suspect we had not made the best possible use of our time in the eye of the storm. I bellowed across to the captain.
What are we to do, Captain?
Jettison the cargo to keep her light, and then search the ship for fuel to stoke the boilers.
So I ordered the men to jettison our cargo of wooden furniture, fossils, various offcuts of timber, and those figurines of steam engines you get made out of coal. And then we searched the ship for fuel. There was nothing. Doom seemed to stare us in the face. When suddenly the bo'sun had a brainwave.
We were heading for the international dateline, weren't we? So the captain could have a double birthday.
Well, what of it?
Well, don't you see? If only we can get across it, it will be yesterday. And the storm didn't happen until today.
Cried the captain, and with that, he gave the orders to break out the ship's decks to beat the boilers and the cabins, then the mast, then the hull. And then at last, just as we were trying to work out how to feed the engines into the engines, and where, if we managed it, they would go, we lurched across the dateline into yesterday. Instantly the storm vanished, and all souls aboard were saved. Although irritatingly, Captain Pringle instantly made the whole crew walk the plank for failing to get him second birthday presents. Good night.
John Finnemore's souvenir programme was written by and starred John Finnemore, with Margaret Claiborne-Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish. And if you would like a full transcript of today's programme, simply give an infinite number of monkeys an infinite number of typewriters. That's what we did.